This is Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble, and this is part three of his conversation with Jim Gillespie and Blitzfest.
Well, this will bring us to another challenging aspect or time period for Blitzfest, I'm guessing, was how did COVID affect you guys?
That was quite a shock to the system. It was quite a shock to the system. I had just retired. We had had a new director. And what saved us was that we had some money in the bank. I mean, we couldn't have the festival for two years.
And that's your primary fundraiser.
Oh, yeah, 20 and 21. So what saved us was that we were financially pretty secure at the time. We had some money in the bank. And we also, the state government, and they got help from the federal government, had closed venues funding. So we got money as a closed venue, since we were quite an established entity. Mm-hmm. So that really saved our ass, so we could pay staff and keep going. But yeah, 2 years with no festival was hard.
Oh, we did it with the Hemingway thing, you know. It was like pulling teeth to get that revamped. After 2 years, I think we canceled two or three conferences, at least two, and then trying to get that momentum going again.
It's tough. I mean, for Blitzfest, people were chomping at the bit to get going again, but we still haven't recovered totally. I mean, we were selling out before COVID, the three or four years before COVID, we were doing sellout, and then we were off for 2 years, and then when we came back, we didn't sell out, and this year, we still got a couple hundred tickets we can sell.
We're getting close,
so I'm hoping to sell out.
And again, that number is regulated by the contract you have with the...
Yeah, 5,500. It's kind of a bit of a formula, but 5,000 weekend. I think it's 5,000 weekend, and then we get 500 additional on Saturday and 500 additional on Sunday.
And then you can comp 10,000 tickets if you want and inundate the whole community.
That's true. There's no rules on comps. So you don't cost me anything.
All right.
Except a port-a-john or two.
And that beer refrigerator is going to be in danger.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about more what goes on the farm during the rest of the year. I mean, you guys have a farmhouse. I actually won an overnight stay, which I never cashed in out there.
Oh, God, that's a great spot.
I actually got
spot.
The coupon someplace.
We'd probably honor it. Yeah, that's an interesting story. I mean, after we'd settled with the county and gotten our consent judgment, that was in 2001. In 2010, I approached them to get a special use permit, and we were calling it the Blitzfest Arts Recreation Center, and we were able to get a special use permit for using the festival site for more than just the festival. And that was a bit of a political struggle, but we convinced the community to let us use it more often, but not for a festival, for mm-hmm. just small events, no more than 300 people. And as part of this, we were able to establish a permanent campground. So now we have people coming in and camping all summer long, at not right now during the build up to the festival,
yeah,
but
sure.
on the shoulder sides of the festival, we have a regular campground that you can book it through Hip Camp, I guess is what we do. Then we've got six cabins that we can do that with as well. Mm-hmm. We've had all kinds of different events. We've had weddings out there. We've had farm-to-table dinners, weekend retreats, stuff like that. So it's now we can use it more than just for the festival, as long as it's low-key and small. Mm-hmm. So,
is some of the property actually being used as farmland, or you have some crops out there, don't you? Didn't you have?
Well, we did what we called living fences, like to kind of demarcate the different campgrounds and stuff like that. We grew grapes and
grapes.
Put asparagus in, and we grow shiitake mushrooms. So we do some growing. Yeah.
And got any morels out there you would like to mark off on a map for me?
Yeah, there are some morels out there, yeah.
That's my big obsession right now. I find about 50 pounds a week right now, which is pretty good. I find him at the farm market downtown Petoskey. With the mushroom guy. He explains to you how much you're saving by buying from him. So you didn't drink 5 bottles
Ken
of water.
Ken Harris got the rap down, yeah.
The mushroom guy.
Yeah, Ken's been in, you know Ken Harris, obviously.
Yeah.
He's been involved in the Bliss Fest for years.
He looks like the kind of person.
Well, he runs one of our stages called the Blistrodome.
Yeah, he's a musician himself.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah, the Blistrodome is another venue that we have at the festival. How many venues do we have? We got main stage, second stage, third stage, Songtree, Drum Kiva, Blistrodome, Michigan State. We have 7 venues going on concurrently.
That's a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, that's a lot of coordinating.
I have to babysit once a year 100 Hemingway aficionados for a 3-day festival, and that's like when I'm done with that, I'm like done. It's like I can imagine. No, this is a huge undertaking.
I tell you, after the festival, the staff is just spent.
Done.
we all just collapse for a month. It's like I don't want to talk to you for a month.
Well, I've got all these fellow board members that are live all across the country, and they'll call and say, "Hey, we'll be there Thursday night to help." Thursday night, everything's done. It's been a year. I've got everything. Yeah. Thursday night, I can relax. There's nothing for you to do on Thursday. Enjoy the conference. You know,
right.
I've got it all taken care of.
That's right. Yeah, it's on its own now.
And then Sunday, I tear everything down and autopilot.
Well, that's kind of how the festival is. You work your ass off during the year to put it together, and then as you get closer and closer, more and more volunteers show up. So it's like it makes it easier. You know, it's like. So much gets done in the last week of the festival, because we always have all these projects, like we're switching out we're making a new walk-in cooler, you know, we're making a new room here, we're doing this, and so all these carpenters show up and plumbers and electricians, and it just happens, you know, it's amazing to see it come together, but you know as the one who's putting it all together, you wonder if it's going to happen, then all of a sudden it does. People show up and it happens.
That's what a guy told me, man. The first time I hosted my first conference as president of the Hemingway Society, and I didn't have a whole lot of help. But the guy goes, "Hey, just remember, the conference will start, there'll be a middle, and it'll end. Everything middle, you put out fires, right. But it's going to do."
Exactly. Yeah, you'll be putting out fires for the weekend, but that's what I did. You know, once it started, there'd be a line of people looking for me. Sometimes I just have to go hide, you know. Say, "Where's Jim?" "I don't know. He's gone. he's hiding somewhere." You know, just have to wait.
I get requests, like crazy requests from because we deal with a little bit of an older crowd too. But can you guarantee us hypoallergenic sleeping, you know, pillows? And I'm like, I don't, oh I know, I'm trying to be pretty accommodating here, but some of this stuff.
Right, we get that with the artists and their, you know, their need for blue M&Ms and stuff.
Yeah, they do the Van Halen thing. I can take all the brown M&Ms out, leave me with the blue.
And we those went. Riders, you have to pick through those riders really carefully. It's like,
well, that's why Van Halen did it. That was the, they weren't
just
trying
see
to.
If they read
they
it.
Had nothing to do with the M&Ms. They wanted the lighting and the stage and the electricity to be sufficient. And sure if you put those details down, like Eddie wanted 2 bottles of clear liquor.
Right.
So that's what he, which he did. That did go to use.
Well, we get to the point where we have our writer now. So our writer
good
is
way.
Attached to their writer. Because it's like, if you want all this shit, you know, they'll want certain things, you know, the name brand, this and that. It's like, okay. And our writer says, "You will take all the stuff that you asked for."
Okay. Yeah.
So just remember that. If you want a case of this and a case of Perrier or something like that, you're taking it fucking with you.
We're not here to
that
store.
That slows them down. It does slow them down. So our writers, you know, try to counter their...
That's a hell of an idea.
Oh, yeah. I've developed that writer over years and years and years. And, like, we try to get them to use the same back line. For example, like, you know, they always want to bring their own fucking drum kit.
Yeah.
And I was like, "And we got this great drum kit. It's like professional, you know, it's great." And so it's like, "All right, you want your own drum kit? That'll cost you 15 minutes of your set time."
It is. It's a nightmare setting all that stuff up. I've done that professionally before. The work that takes into putting in a stage and pulling equipment off.
Some of the acts, we just have to do it. And so they actually literally bring in their own sound engineer, and they basically plug into ours and run it.
we did it at the Cherry Fest. Kenny brought in the Experience Hendrix tour. We had Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Billy Cox, the last member of any of Hendrix's trios, and all these guys came in, some pretty heavy hitters, and we had everything all set up, and the worst goddamn storm I've ever seen came across West Bay 2 hours before the show. And all through the night, we put Visqueen over the amps and stuff. It did nothing. Halfway through the show, everything was blowing. People were trying to fix this, fix that. Wet. Eric Gales was there, one of the most amazing guitar players in the world. And Eric's like, they're having trouble with his amp. I just grabbed another amp, threw it on top of the old amp, pulled the wires, plugged it in. He thanked me, you know. But the logistical problems like that, and we are in northern Michigan, so you guys have to deal with the elements.
Weather is definitely always scary as shit. You know, it's like you don't know if you're going to get some front coming through. And just, we've had hail, we've had snow, we've had crazy weather events. We've been relatively lucky, though, overall.
My most
knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on
please
wood.
Please God, the weather's this summer seems to be really.
This is the weirdest
dynamic.
June I've ever seen.
Very dynamic.
I think that it's July now.
Yeah, it's July. Hopefully, it'll settle down. Please settle down so we have like 3 days of sun.
Well, I had a couple of experiences with Kenny setting up festivals like that. One was the Cherry Festival, which is a huge, pretty big event.
Oh my God!
But the other one was they got, and I don't know how in the hell you get permits for this, but we used to do the Torch Fest out on the sandbar.
Oh yeah!
And so out here I'm rowing Kenny out in this boat, and there's the stage suspended on 4 foot poles, and it's holding a generator as big as this room, and I'm thinking, if this generator goes into the lake, every single person that's waiting neck deep is done. That's it. We're done. And then a hell of a storm comes across the lake, and we just scattered, man. I don't necessarily want to be out suspended on a lake with a generator that has that kind of a...
Oh, yeah. I tell you, there's a lot of logistics and a lot of potential nightmares when it comes to outdoor festivals.
You got
to
have a plan B, man.
It's we do. We've got stuff covered up as best we can, and we got some serious tents, but you never know what's going to hit.
Look what happened just a couple days ago.
We had to put in a siren. That was one of the
a storm siren. Or?
Yeah, we had to put. Yeah, it was like cost us $15,000
just to put the alert.
We've never used it.
Never. Thank God, though.
Thank God. I don't know. It's gotten to the point where I'm not sure if we know how to use it.
Well, look what happened last week, though, man. It turned pitch black at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I know.
Remember that? It was nice, and then it was like, what the hell just happened?
I know.
Not what you want to see when you're standing on stage and you got your $20,000 Taylor guitar or any of your equipment.
That's the outdoor festivals are always, they're always risky. You're always taking a chance. But we've done all right with weather over the years. We've had really good weather. For some reason, that weekend
it's bliss, man. You just got to put a request.
Sometimes we get what's called the Beaver Island split. You know, the weather gets split up by Beaver Island and it goes to the south of us and to the north of us.
Leave the hippies alone, man.
Right. They're just frolicking in the woods.
That's all we're doing. What are the plans for the future? Yours. You mentioned right now you're working on like a memoir about bliss. Is that?
Well, we've got this little project called Chronicles of Bliss. You know, so it's a blistery or bliss history. We call it blistery.
The blistery.
That's Will, Michael, and I are working on that, and so that's one of our things, and we're going to try to make it multimedia as much as we can. We got a lot of media stuff that we'd like to incorporate into it as well. So that's cool. It's such great history. I mean, it's such a great, 43 years of stuff.
You've been there for the whole run. They got to get the information from you.
Yeah, I've been to all the festivals.
It's got to be archived.
There's not too many people that have been to all the festivals. There are some. There's a small cadre of people that have been to all the festivals.
I know people that brag about how many they've been to.
It's pretty cool.
And you're going to still stay part of the organization.
I'm a board emeritus.
Emeritus.
Yeah. So I go to the board meetings. I keep track of what's going on, and there's still knowledge that I have that they have to tap into. It's funny.
What are the dates this year, Austin?
11, 12, and 13.
11, 12, and 13?
Yeah. It's always between the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and 12th, 13th, 14th. It's that weekend. The second full weekend of the July.
and do what does it cost up to these days? I mean, $5 back in that, that was a pretty good chunk of change back
now,
way back.
Now it's like over 100.
Yeah, but still, if you know.
But it's a great bargain, really, because there's so many acts. I mean, as I say, there's like 60, 70 different groups or solo acts. It's great. It's amazing.
Hey, you're gonna get your money's worth. That's a cheap weekend.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. You can't see it all. I mean, but most of the bands are playing two or three times. Most of the, not the headliners.
Okay, but the other,
they're one and done usually, unless we can squeeze something out of them. Sometimes we can get a little show out of a headliner if they're into it. Some of them are. Some headliners like to do festivals and they like to participate more than others. Some of them are just, I want to do my show and I'm done. I'm gone. Bye. I'm getting my touring bus. Bye-bye. But some of them will actually participate a little bit more, which is
hang
cool.
Out and
yeah,
enjoy
like
too.
Michael Frante, he was really cool. And he participated a little bit more. So it depends on the negotiations and the management.
And what their schedule allows.
Yeah, yeah. But most people hang out for the weekend and just have a grand old time.
If I could just add something to this conversation, you mentioned the ticket prices. I have those pulled up. If you'd like me to mention a few of the prices,
sure.
Yeah,
for them.
Please.
An adult weekend, 18 and over is $250 for the weekend. Teen weekend is $110. Children 12 and under are free.
That's always been the case. It's promoting a camp. Are family friendly,
and then you go down from there, and you have a variety of packages. One that piqued my interest, which is the disc golf walk-in camp. I'm a big disc golfer, so I may have to come now.
Well, you know, we have a. Have you never done the Blissfest disc golf course?
No, never.
It's 19 holes.
Okay, I'm interested now.
It's
you
really,
got me.
Hooked. It's really a cool course. Now during the festival, it shrinks down to 12. Because we have to use some of the holes,
of course,
much to the dismay of the disc golfers. Let me tell you, that's a political hot potato.
Richie Havens is playing.
I just had to write a long, extensive text to the disc golf coordinator to tell him that he's losing two more holes this year because we need more parking. But it's a combined. It goes through a wooded area and it has a. Meadow area. It's a really nice course. You should
okay.
check it out.
No, I'm intrigued nice now. I haven't been able to disc golf all spring for some odd reason.
Oh, really?
But,
yeah.
But I'll definitely come up there now.
It's a nice course. I helped lay it out. It's really cool.
What day?
It's kind of a buffer area. We developed it because the county kind of wanted a buffer area near the roads, and so
sure.
And we put they agreed to. And this is on our conservation easement, so they agreed to put a disc golf course on our conservation easement, which the county owns. So it's basically a county sanctioned course, and their only stipulation that it had to be free to the public. We went, no problem.
Man, good.
Free to the public. Yeah, people actually come there and they play it in the wintertime. I mean, I've seen people playing it in the snow.
Are you a winner? Are you a winner?
No, have you ever Austin's done that? They're up there. It's crazy.
You're fair weathered, man.
I only like the sunshine and slight winds.
Yeah, yeah, just the right wind to carry it.
Like today, July 1st, it's sunny, slight breeze out while we're here in the studio. This would be the perfect day to go out and play disc golf
or
just golf.
I'm gonna call in sick today, man. We're gonna head out to Bliss, see if we can volunteer for the afternoon.
You should check out that course. It's really a nice course. But it gets a little crazy during the festival because there's of course 8,000 people on the property. So it gets shrunk a little bit.
Getting pegged with
12, but we gave them 12 holes this year instead of 19, so they're licking their wounds, but they'll adapt.
I said adapt.
Didn't
a couple people get a little freaked out by some helicopters that flew over a couple years ago?
Oh yeah, that was a wild one. The helicopter came in too low and got in trouble with the FAA.
And bombed. He was coming into bomb Blissfest.
Yep.
Out of all the years, what do you think? What was one of your favorite memories of the whole? I think, and I don't want to answer for you, but I think a lot of times when people look back, it's kind of like when these things are starting, and starting to gain steam? Where you know, what were the glory years for you, or some
gain momentum? Yeah, well, it's had so many different phases, because I mean, it was really nice when we started to make money.
Yeah, that's always a good thing.
Because I was losing money. It wasn't a lot of money. I mean, the budgets early on, budgets was like, you know, maybe we'd lose $1,500 or something, and the whole budget was $8,000. You know, now the budget's $600,000.
$600,000.
to do the show, yeah.
To do the show, $600,000.
Yeah. $200,000 just in artist fees.
Man, that's pretty good. That's a hell of a budget.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if we can pull in $1,000,000, we're doing okay.
Nice, nice.
So we try to make $400,000 or $500,000 out of this show. And
it's a little better than that $5 under the apple tree, or the maple tree. Yeah,
right,
first year.
Right, right. That was when the wristband was a piece of yarn. Hopefully you didn't know it. You had know the color.
That's hard to bootleg those.
Then we started the second year was a yarn and then a little plastic chip. We've always had to try to stay ahead of the forgers.
Yeah, yeah. What night will you be playing?
I'm playing Friday and Sunday.
Friday and Sunday.
Friday, I think I'm playing at the Song Tree, and Sunday I'm at the Blisto Dome.
And you're the one in your rider. You demand risers, smoke machines,
yeah,
and,
right,
and the laser show, right? That is the laser show, right? The
right,
Pink
and
Floyd.
Attendance. And attendance.
Attendance, yes.
Yes.
Everybody has to come see me play. Well, Jim, we definitely appreciate you coming on here again as you're preparing for the festival. I hope it's a great, successful year.
Me too.
All those that haven't reached out already and looked for those last tickets, or you know, want to make their way out there.
They're
like
going
myself.
Fast, so get your tickets soon.
Going fast. And how do people contact Bliss?
Blissfest.org.
That's pretty easy, blissfest.org.
You bet.
I found it pretty easily, and I'm not that great on the computer, so... Well, it's always a pleasure to see you. And again, I hope we get a chance to jam again.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able
again.
To do this. I'm glad we ran into each other at the post office.
Hey, you never know what's going to happen
at the post
office, right?
That's what happens,
right?
Yeah. Running into each other at the post office, and then a podcast occurs.
Yeah.
That's good. It's been fun.
I think we
covered a lot of territory. Now, where does this get broadcast?
Well, this doesn't ever get broadcast or aired. This is all just for our archives.
Oh, okay, no. this was just a practice.
This is
okay,
a practice
I'll
run.
Come back
we'll
tomorrow. We'll
one.
Do the real thing.
We got a real guest tomorrow. We're going to bring him in.
Okay, yeah.
Austin's going to give us the times right now.
So what I will do just for listeners is, since this is a Tuesday, I'll take all day to edit it.
Yeah.
And I got to take out some choice words here.
He said I could
the word swear. Diversity. You can't say diversity.
I said diversity. I said immigrants.
So basically, I will edit this down, and we also air this on WMKT, our talk station here with
McDonald
Garber.
Oh, so that's
got to
be clean.
Yes.
The FCC
yes.
doesn't...
I got popped for the F-bomb already on that one.
So that wasn't your fault. That was mostly mine. But so I'll clean that up for this, and that's a much shorter segment, but this whole conversation I'll splice into about three parts for Spotify, Apple, wherever you find podcasts. On your phone.
Yeah, what's the name?
The name of this, which I know you mentioned about an hour and a half ago now.
Yeah, good. We got some time.
He's supposed to mention it more than once.
So this is called Tales of Northern Michigan's Past.
That's right. Tales of Northern Michigan's
Past.
Which
I actually...
If I search that on my podcast,
it should pop up. Before we go, Chris, I have to share a story with you. I was down in Traverse City a few weekends ago for a bachelor party. I was on top of the beacon of the Park Place Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is... That was our last stop of the night.
Well, that's a good place to end the evening.
Exactly. So, of course, I had a few whiskey sours then. But I sat next to this gentleman at the bar, and we just started talking about podcasts right away. So I shared the podcast with him, and he sent me a text the other day. Somehow I gave him my number. I can't remember how. Or an email, one of the two. He says, "Oh, I absolutely love this. I'm going to share it with all my friends."
Oh, great. Yeah.
Awesome.
I get a lot of good response. People coming into the store, Arlington Jewelers that I own downtown. that was not a plug. I just, but no, they come in and they share, but they'll hear my voice too. They're like, "How do I know that voice?"
I forgot to say drgoodhart.com.
Yeah, drgoodhart.com. Throw these plugs in. The funniest one for me, though, is I didn't understand the concept when they asked me to do this podcast 5 years ago. I thought Tim Nixon was going to be interviewing me, and they're like, "No, you're going to talk." I'm like, "What the hell am I going to talk about? I failed radio class."
And then I failed radio class.
And then we started getting like a couple of Hemingway families on, and then at one point we hit like 33 countries or something like that. It was outrageous when we looked at the demographics. People were But we have all these people up here that love Northern Michigan, that live, you know, all around the country.
Yeah, and they see something that says Tales of Northern Michigan.
They want it.
I'm going to check this out.
I'm going to check it out. So that's the benefit of living in Northern Michigan. This is not a bad place to have as a home base. Right. So.
No, and we've had several people reach out about story ideas more recently.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Where aviation may be one, women's history up here in Northern Michigan, the lighthouses, if we haven't done one yet.
Yeah, we've done a couple.
You get ideas, yeah. I'm sure there's lots of ideas.
We have a whole catalog of maybe 30 ideas we have yet to
potential
do.
Potential pods, yeah.
And I've already got four or five, like, in my mind. That's the thing. That's why we started this. There is an endless amount of niche history in Northern Michigan. It's
maple
endless.
Maple syrup and stuff like that.
Anything. I mean, all there's so many different genres to touch upon. So we try to pick themes. Like, we did some true murder stuff one year. We did the haunted lighthouses. We've done, you know, they wanted me to do one on ghost every other week, too. But I do all the ghost tours in town.
Right.
And I really vet all those stories. So to come up with enough stories every 2 weeks.
That's a lot.
It's got to be legitimate, or I'm not going to tell the
story. You'd be working 24 hours a day on that.
So we tried to do them in October, you know, for Halloween. But
right.
It's been very rewarding having the response. And I do all these tours, too. So I just last week, I had 125 people come in on two motor coaches. So they all get a little handout. My wife printed out for me very, very graciously to hand out to people so they can listen to the podcast. A lot of times on the way back to this group was from Grand Rapids. We've had them from the Carolinas, Canada, even from Canada. That's right, where you have all your musicians coming in from. But we have a good outreach and a good way of promoting the event and the podcast, and then also on the radio. That's such a benefit also. So
what you should do with Arlington Jewelers there is have a poster on the window with your podcast on.
Got to do
too.
It, man. I keep saying we need swag. Trish has got to get us t-shirts, hats, blazers. On a chilly day, I should
press
have a vest
and everything.
T-shirts is everything, man. That's people love swag. I mean, even the richest rock performers still want those hats. And,
I will say one of our best sellers here. When I say best seller, I mean just the things that we give away whenever we're doing out in the community for the stations. Pens.
People like pens.
Love our pens. With KHQ, Light 96, Star Country, you name it. They'll just take four or five pens per person and just say, I love these pens. Where can I get more?
It's great organic advertising.
It is, yeah. You don't need a whole lot on it. You just need... You could just put Tales of Northern Michigan's Past on it, and you're good.
My wife put up these great little tags. They got scans on them. Takes people right there. It's she's always, Tanya Strubel, just give you a little shout out. Tell my wife how much I appreciate all that she's done to help me promote this program.
You gotta tell her how much you love her, too.
How much I love her.
Nice.
Hope she's listening. I'll make sure she just
don't edit that out. Don't edit that out.
My favorite experience, though, was I didn't understand the whole concept, and I didn't listen to the first podcast for weeks and weeks and weeks. Nobody likes to hear their own voice. And we were taking a trip on the road, and Austin and I start hearing this voice. It's very calming and like, this is good content. What the hell is this? What are we listening to? And my wife goes, that's you. I'm like, thank God for producers and engineers. Yeah, it sounds like
they got me sounding good.
I actually sound articulate. They edit this out, edit that out. And so it's been a fun process. This is a season five we're into right now. Yeah, and we've had some great guests You
is it a weekly or a
bi-weekly?
Bi-weekly, so,
yep, okay, every other week. Cool. And then you can look up all the old episodes.
You got some stuff in the can. You got some.
Yeah, we've got, I don't know,
a bunch of shows.
Oh yeah, I'd say my favorite one that I did. It was the first one that I actually did with you. Was Valerie Hemingway?
Oh, Valerie Hemingway was a
that
killer
was.
One.
And I bet. This was last year, about this time now, where my dad and I were actually going out to Maine. My sister ran the half marathon in Portland, Maine.
Okay.
And we were taking our Airstream out there, and I had suggested to my dad, oh, let's listen to this podcast. And at the end of it, he says, this sounds really effing good.
I thought it did. I thought it sounded like an NPR interview. I thought it came out really well. And of course, that's, you got Valerie Hemingway. You can't go bad. Just shut up and let her talk. You know?
Yeah.
She just expounds on
her. I remember you told me, Chris, about her. So like, you sound amazing, but I sound like absolute dog crap. But I'm like, I told you, it's like, it's just authentic. I can't mess that up.
Yeah,
you just can't touch it.
Yeah,
especially how much history she has in her brain and all that with Ernest and all that.
Yeah, wow.
That's just something you cannot edit that.
No, you bring a good guest in, and the show takes its own life
right,
form.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Just like Jim, like we've known each other for years, and when you have a good rapport with somebody, it goes a lot smoother.
It's pretty smooth. Yeah, it's pretty smooth.
Some people just bomb too. Like we try to talk to them. Like we've had, I don't even want to mention the, you knows. Well, we had one gentleman that said, you know, I think 186,000 times.
Oh, no.
And Austin had to go back and try to get rid of it. It was just a nervous habit. You
I
know,
eliminated
you know,
about 80% of that. It was
excruciatingly painful.
It was a hard work of editing.
And, yeah. And before Austin, we had a clicker. The guy would... You do this in between.
That's another challenge there. Okay.
It was unbelievable.
If you ever have that man on again, I will personally.
Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of Tales of Northern Michigan's Past. Again, we thank Jim Gillespie, founder and former executive director of BlizzFest, although he continues to be an entity out there. For joining us today.
It won't go away.
Never going away. Make your way out to BlizzFest. And again, as always, if there's an episode that you'd like to hear more about some particular aspect of Northern Michigan, or if you're an expert, make sure and contact us and find us on Facebook also. Until next time, thank you very much. This is Christopher Struble.